Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to episode 304 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and I have the pleasure of being joined today by Alan Feely from Football España. As I say with so many of the first-time guests now as we enter the 300s, Alan, I don't know how I didn't have you on the show before. With your work with Football España, you're a terrific reporter, not a reporter, but just content creator of the league, La Liga. And yeah, I'm sorry to you, actually, that I haven't had you on earlier. How's it going?
No worries, Dan. It's great to be here now anyway today, and I'm sure that we live a fruitful relationship heading forward as Barcelona continue to go from strength to crisis and back to strength again with the arrival of Xavi Hernandez. So one thing of Barcelona is that it's never shy of content, eh? And our eyes will always be fixed firmly on Camp Nou and the Blaugrana.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to take a flight on that earlier. Well, not early in the week, but on the second show of last week's show, Kevin Williams and I brought up Dani Alves. And we dismissed it pretty quickly. Both him and I dismissed it. We're like, well, I mean, it seems like it's already out of the news cycle. We're done with that. And so today we're going to start with the main headline. Dani Alves has signed for FC Barcelona since the last time we spoke. And we're going to continue on. We're going to talk a little bit about Thiago Alcantara, Karim Adeyemi, because there are still rumors floating out there. And then Alan, obviously, with your rapport with Football España, covering the entire league, not just FC Barcelona. The rest of our show then today is going to be talking about how Barcelona could go from ninth in the table to potentially wherever they wind up, whether that's up, whether that's down, and some of the other teams, because we myopically always look at Barcelona through the scope of FC Barcelona, and we look at the league through the scope of FC Barcelona and Real Madrid, but there's a lot going on in the league this season. But we'll get to that later on, because we're going to start with Dani Alves. So as a neutral, Alan, I ask you, what were your impressions of that signing when you saw that it went down?
I'm very pleased with the signing. I think it's great for Barcelona. It's great for La Liga on several levels. I mean, obviously, there's his qualities of footballer. I mean, of course, he's 38 years old. He isn't the player he was when he left for Juventus in the summer of 2016. But he's still probably the greatest right back in the history of the game. He's a competitive animal. Just last August, September, he led Brazil to the Olympic gold, played every minute of every single game. So he's still a functional, capable footballer. He's not a geriatric who can only play one game in three. And the thing with Dani Alves, it has been said by several people, most notably, you know, Sid Lowe in recent times since the signing happened. While he's a jovial, full of life character, he is also a very, very serious competitor. And I have full confidence that while we can't speculate as to how much he'll contribute on the pitch from Barcelona, how many games he'll play between now and the end of the season, how many assists he'll contribute, how well he'll be getting up and down the right flank. What we do know is that from today, I'm pretty sure training has got up octane, because you've a guy who's a serious competitor. He was a key part of Pep Guardiola's Barcelona team. Xavi knows this. That's why he brought him back. He's personal experience of how he is as a person. So I'm pretty sure that, you know, in terms of application to training across the squad, things will rise, because not only is he coming into the squad with a winning mentality, because Pique has that, you know, you could say Marc-Andre Ter Stegen has that, Jordi Alba has that, all these guys have that, Messi had that, of course, but what you have with Dani Alves, what you don't have with them, is that this is a reprieve for him. This is a lease of life, because he didn't have a club for the last 3 or 4 months since he left Sao Paulo in September. And that didn't end very well. It was quite acrimonious. And I've just come back from Brazil, so I know what the situation there is in terms of how he's perceived and all that kind of thing. there was a lot of, you know, discrepancy over money and over the way he was playing and the position he was playing and how he was playing. But let's not go there. But the point is that he knows now he has a chance between now and next November when the 2022 World Cup begins in Qatar. He is a period where he can do his best to get into Tite's squad for the World Cup. That's his primary ambition. So he's coming in with two goals. One is to rebuild the Barcelona team and the other is to get into that squad. And he's doing it knowing that had things gone a different way, had Barcelona chosen a different coach, there's every chance that he mightn't have been brought back to the club and he might have had to return to Brazil or go to Boca Juniors in Argentina or go to Mexico or something like that. And his chances of getting into TJ's squad would be reduced heavily. So he's combining this winning mentality and this caliber that's second to none, you could say, with this kind of reprieve of getting another chance, another shot, one last goal at the big time, you know? So it's a very potent mix. And as somebody who loves La Liga and who wants to see a strong Barcelona, not a banter club, I think that having Dani Alves back in the league is only good.
All right. Well, geez, Alan, I mean, I have my notes and you hit every single one of my notes. So we're going to try to extend this segment just a little bit. You said don't go there about the Sao Paulo thing, but I do actually want to go there because it does say a lot about his motivations, where the reports are to believe that they had owed him about $2 million when he left. And if that number is to be believed, he's also arriving. I mean, the number we saw was €1 or whatever it was, 1,000 euros or something per week, which I'm not sure how true that is with his contract. I mean, he hasn't even officially signed it until Wednesday when he's going to be presented. So I'm not sure we know what those numbers are exactly. But what we do know is, as you said, this move does not seem for Dani Alves, where if he left a prior club, his boyhood club of Sao Paulo, to come back to Barcelona. Well, he left Sao Paulo. It wasn't to come to Barcelona. It was just to get another gig to go to the Olympics. But it shows that his motivations are purely twofold, to help the club that he loves greatly, that had his best years, that turned him into the legend that he is in the game, where he was nothing but a consummate winner. And the second part of that is, yes, to individually make sure that he reminds Brazilian fans who may have turned on him, but more importantly, the Brazilian national team that, hey, I was your captain. I played every single minute at the Olympics. We won gold and I'm going to be fine to play for 2022. I deserve to be there and I'm playing for FC Barcelona. And that shows you that my level is fully capable of doing so. And when you talk about the banter too, you mentioned about the winning and, you know, it is unfortunate because the Dani Alves that is re-signing at 38 is not the same that left. Sure. But it was interesting when he left that so many in the club and me included, where you felt like they had to bring somebody new in, that you were seeing a bit of a decline. It was happening where we knew that once his speed had been reduced just a bit, and you know, I'm over 32, and once you lose that half a step, defending is a lot harder. But since that time, the reason we say banter is because 93.7 million euros were spent on Aleix Vidal, Nelson Semedo, Musa Wage, Serginho Dest, and Emerson, all to dislodge Sergio Roberto. And now I guess you could add Mingueza to the mix, but to dislodge Sergio Roberto from that starting right back position, where you're saying that Sergio Roberto's best position is midfield, but he, even as a midfielder, he's not a starter for Barcelona, yet he's a starting right back for all those reasons. And with the Sao Paulo thing, I want to ask you now, we haven't had many people be able to see because of the Brazilian league's availability around the world, as far as television rights and broadcasting rights, not everyone got to see the 22 appearances he made for Sao Paulo last season. And you mentioned he played in those 22 appearances, right midfield, attacking midfielder, center midfielder, defensive midfielder, and right back. Now, to me, it's more telling that at the Olympics, he played as the right back in every single match. And the question you get from Dani Alves is kind of, where will he play for Barcelona? And as you mentioned, the most important part of this signing is in training, is in leadership, but will Xavi, will his friend use him on the field?
I think so. And I was thinking about this today because obviously you have Serginho Dest there at the moment, who's probably first choice right back, you could say. But he's obviously playing on the right wing in recent weeks. So I was wondering, you know, would he start him at right back and then keep Serginho out wide right and kind of have Dani Alves coming up behind him? Because he's mentioned in his press conference, Xavi, that he likes the idea of having wide players. And that's kind of a pep cornerstone, you could say, having players who kind of hug the touchline to kind of spread the play and give more options as well when you're on the ball. Or, you know, conversely, could he be playing Dani Alves out right wing and start Serginho Dest at right back? So there's several angles he could take. But one thing I think for sure is that when it comes to actually crossing a football, Dani Alves is the best option on the right side now because nobody can cross a ball like him. We don't know how his physicality is going to hold up. because like the Brazilian league where he's been since 2019 is on a different plane to European football in terms of the way it's tactically organized, in terms of the conditioning, in terms of the way the players prepare themselves. It's completely different. So you can't really judge the way he played there against the way he's going to play in Europe again, especially in a league as competitive as La Liga, in an environment as high pressure as Barcelona. So there's question marks there for sure. But I guess he has, what, 6 weeks between now and his debut to be able to get into top shape.
Right.
He's kept the fit. I follow him on Instagram and he's always posting videos of him in the gym, you know, shirtless, all this kind of stuff. You know, his caption is good crazy. So I don't think that there is, like, a lot of older players suffer mentally before they do physically. As in, they believe their body is breaking down before it breaks down. And that changes the way they play. It changes the way they commit to challenges, the way they commit to runs. And that's a big element, I think. I think when you doubt in your mind, that affects your physical composition. That can be a bit new idea for some people, though, I don't know. But that's what I think personally. And I reckon that Dani Alves is so bulletproof mentally and so self-confident that he won't have that at all. And he's going to be going in like a, I don't know, like a hare from day one. He'd be taking no prisoners in training. He'd be going at full tongs, full capacity. So I reckon that if there is a glimmer of hope, he'll be able to extricate that hope and deliver, you know. And whether that's a right back or on the right wing, I don't know. I don't think it'll be in central midfield. That was specific to Brazil. I think he'll be playing on the right flank. But whether that's up high and wide, where he replaces Serginho, or it's a right back, I don't know. But I reckon that he'll be there.
Well, yeah, I think it starts that conversation, not even with right back, where if Sergio Roberto is returning to the midfield as one of those two pivots for Xavi, or maybe even as an interior, one of the two interiors for Xavi, who knows, it's to what system and formation they're going to usually run out there. He has said, that being Xavi, that he is willing to change the formation based on the opposition, where he's willing to play with the two pivots and the two interiors against a 4-4-2. But if he's against a 4-4-3, that he's willing to do a 4-3-3. Depends on, and the low, against a low block, he usually plays the 4-3-3. That is Xavi. And if we can take what he's done in Qatar and try to translate that to what he'll do at Barcelona, big question. But you're right, the one thing that he has, the through line that he has really pushed through, that being Xavi, is that he really wants wide players. And so we know that Dani Alves will be hugging the touchline somewhere, but it's a matter of how far up the field. And when you ask about that right winger depth chart, it is Dembele, if healthy, and the biggest if, obviously, for Barcelona's health. For all the injuries to Ansu Fati and even Roberto, looking at his recent two seasons, Roberto was never really on the field. Pique, Umtiti, no matter who you say, you know, injuries are everywhere in Barcelona's. Pedri, you know, no matter who you say, it's all injuries. But Dembele, obviously, is the biggest if. And then there are Serginho, Dest. But then there's that trio that we're seeing that Xavi's going to take a hard look at of Demir, Abde, and Ilacha Comas. So 17 and 18-year-olds and a 19-year-old in Abde. We don't know where that trio is going to fit. He might say, hey, these are all two inexperienced players. And now that right wing depth chart, if those three are kind of cast aside by Xavi for experience reasons, is just Dembele, if he's fit, and Dest. So very quickly, Dani Alves being a right wing option becomes ever present. Because outside of Dest and Dembele, it has to be Dani Alves as the third on that depth chart, if not for Demir, Abde, and Ilacha Comas, as I've said. Now, Xavi, you get the idea that he might I don't think he would go with Gabi on that right wing. I think he's going to keep Gabi as an interior and keep him in the middle of the field. It's where he fits most comfortably as a player. So again, Dani Alves, if he played 6 to 10 matches coming off the bench sometimes, maybe starting occasionally, that wouldn't surprise me. But if he also plays, what, 27 times, right, across all competitions, depending on how far Barca get in Copa del Rey, if he plays 27 times, both as a starter and a bench option, that also would not surprise me. And the final point on Dani Alves, we wrap it up, the winning mentality that you spoke about, because you had mentioned that Pique and Alba and Ter Stegen, those are players that have dealt with a great number of pressure. They're players that have played in huge moments, but Dani Alves is nothing but a winner. He doesn't have that to say that, almost the same thing actually as Xavi, oddly enough. Of that generation, there is no knock on them. Xavi lost a bit at the beginning of his career, and then he was nothing but a winner until he hung it up. For Dani Alves, he's been nothing but a winner the entire time. Even with Sevilla, he led them to one of their greatest eras ever in the center of the midfield, as an attacking midfielder, then out wide as well. So Dani Alves, 23 trophies at the club. He basically left the club before that, you know, the great decline, if you will, of all the heartache and all the heartbreak. And I wonder, as you mentioned, if no shine has come off Dani Alves, that will inject a life that the rest of those experienced players like Pique and Busquets and Alba and Ter Stegen just cannot, because they've been they've been knocked down a peg. They've been in their own minds, they've become the team that is ninth in the Liga. And Dani Alves goes, hey, we're FC Barcelona. Don't we win trophies here? What are we doing here? I mean, that's what I came here to do, right? And I'm wondering how much, I don't want to overdo that, but I also think that there's a great possibility that that is what Dani Alves is going to represent.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, and just one last point on Dani as well. Like, I mean, he's from Bahia, in the northeast of Brazil.
Yeah.
And I spent a good time there recently, and like the northeast of Brazil is a special place because it's very hard scrabble. It's where, you know, the slaves first came from Africa. It's where the Portuguese had them initially. And it's the blackest part of Brazil as well, Salvador specifically in Bahia, which is close to where Dani is from in Juazeiro. But like those people, without stereotyping and without, you know, kind of, you know, painting with a thick brush, are generally very hardworking. And the people who come to Rio, to Sao Paulo, as migrants and work their way up ladders and are discriminated against. It's like, you know, they're the most discriminated against class in Brazil is the Northeasterners, you know. So they work hard, they know they're tough, they know what it means to suffer. So I guarantee you that, like I said earlier, Dani will be coming in. Like, he's never been comfortable. Like Gerard Pique, Sergio Roberto, Jordi Alba have all been comfortable since 2016 when Dani left. Dani has gone to Juventus, he's won. As you said, he's gone to PSG, he's won. He's gone to Sao Paulo, he's won. They won the Paulista. Even with Bahia, before he joined Sevilla, they won the Copa del Nordeste as well. So he's won everywhere he's gone, you know, and he's not been comfortable, he's not been safe, he's not been, not careful, but he's not been conservative in decision-making, you know. So I completely agree with what you're saying.
Yep, so we go from one actual Brazilian to a player that could have played for Brazil but is a Spanish international. His brother, Rafinha, is a Brazilian international. That is Thiago Alcantara. So Dani Alves, again, I got bit last week because just like with Kevin, I said, well, I don't know. The Dani Alves thing probably not going to happen. So now the rumors about Thiago Alcantara, we have to take all these rumors seriously now. But Thiago, at 30 years old, I feel like even Dani Alves, you could talk us in it for all the reasons that we said. I think you and I were both pretty positive about the Dani Alves signing. But Thiago, I think rightfully so, that he's this really, really, really great player. But if it was a squad that only had a few players who are normally injured, I think people would be more on board. But 30 years old, played 7 times this year, starting twice, has missed 9 games due to a calf injury. I'm going to let you give your thoughts on Thiago. And then, I mean, I think I've already kind of lent my hand or led you into where I would stand on the fact that Thiago, I think it would be a questionable signing if the financial signing is even possible.
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting one because Thiago is a player who I've always rated really, really highly. Like, I think he's probably the most aesthetically pleasing player to watch in the European game. I mean, like you said before, obviously you touched on it there. It's kind of his nationality is an interesting one because he said that while his sensations and his body feels Brazilian in terms of the way he moves and the way he interprets the physical side of life, the kind of sensual side of life, you could say, is Brazilian. His mind, in terms of, you know, his culture, his the way his mind works, the way he reads football, the way he eats, the way he behaves on the day-to-day from an intellectual standpoint is Spanish, and he feels Spanish, and that's why he plays for Spain. Whereas Rafinha has different stories from a different, like different circumstances from Thiago. You can say Thiago being a few years older, and that's why he's playing for Brazil. But I think Thiago pairs that dichotomy perfectly because he plays with that kind of, you know, sensual intuition that we associate with Brazilian football, and he pairs that with tactical discipline that he learned from La Masia, from Barcelona, from Pep Guardiola, at both Barcelona and Bayern Munich, of course, you know. So he has that perfect kind of synergy, you could say, of these two famous footballing cultures. And that's Leeds in his player. But regarding where he is now, I don't know. I think that it's unfortunate for him that he's gone to Liverpool when he did, because, you know, that wasn't a Liverpool team that was conducive to allowing a newcomer to settle, given the way they played last season, the beginning especially. It was tough for him to get into the groove, if that makes sense. And obviously the challenge from Richarlison in the Merseyside derby in October of that year, or last October of 2020, obviously conditioned a bit his selling into the team because he could never get a proper run. And he's been unlucky with injuries throughout his time there. The reason for that, I think, is the physicality and speed of English of Premier League football. Like, it is at a different level at the moment to every other league in the world. I think not in terms of quality. You can make that argument separately, but I think it's to do with the pace of the game, the physicality of the game, and the intensity of the game. There's no winter break. The Christmas period is, you know, helter-skelter. And every single game you play, it's at a different intensity to what he would have been used to in Germany or in Spain, where the pressure is much higher, especially in the Liverpool team that was calamitous for La season. So it's difficult for him from that perspective, if that makes sense, coming from the Bundesliga. I was seeing it this season in England with, you know, Jadon Sancho, Leon Bailey. Like, these guys haven't settled at all so far. So it's tough to make that adaption. I think if he's come back to Spain at this moment in his career, I think it will make sense for several reasons. I think his technical excellence would add another element to the Barcelona midfield. Obviously, you've Nico and Gavi, who are kind of those runners, you could say, who can kind of make things happen and kind of open doors. And I guess Frankie Young has played there as well at times. So I think that his best position is still as a deeper pivot, and that's where he'll play long term, I think, I hope. But I think that Thiago, with his excellence in that number 10 role, I think he brings so much to Barcelona. And while you could say there's, you know, almost too many midfielders there at the moment to fit him in, because you've Nico, you've Gavi, you've Pedri, and you've Frankie, I think that he'd be a worthwhile investment if the financials were correct, because, you know, he's a very impressive character. He's experienced. He's played in England. He's played in Spain. He's played in Germany as well. I think he still has a lot to add, and I'm a big fan of him as a player. And I think he'd bring a bit of maturity and a bit of, I don't know, kind of maybe technical arrogance to the team that's been lacking. Because while Gavi and Pedri and Nico are phenomenal, they're so exciting. I mean, Gavi last night, he was the best player on the pitch as Spain beat Sweden in a pivotal World Cup qualifier in his home city of Seville in front of 51,000 people at the Cartuja, an expecting crowd. But we can't pin too much on them. They're only kids. Like, Gavi's 17, Nico's 19, Pedri is 19. Like, you can't expect them to be delivering week in, week out. So you have an experienced option like Sergio Roberto, as we know, Xavi wants to keep him, wants to retain his contract, like Thiago, potentially, like Sergio Busquets, like Frankie de Jong, then you can give them breathers when they need it, and they can be protected when they need to be protected, because Koeman wasn't protecting them at all. He was throwing them to the wolves, you could say. And while they coped admirably, if there was ever a fallow period for them where they're performing poorly and the crowd got on their back and they began to question themselves, that can be detrimental to their development. I think at a club like Barcelona, you need more options, more senior options in the field. You can't rely on the kids that much this early, at this pivotal moment of their development, for the club, for the team, and for them personally. So I think that while the financials could be questionable given his record, his injury record, I think if they can make it work, he'd be a worthwhile acquisition because he's a really good player.
Well, that's the if, right? The if is if he can stay on the field. And you mentioned that point pretty clearly with Liverpool, that 24 Liverpool matches last year that were missed due to injuries or COVID. He also caught COVID, unfortunately. He played 30. That's a lion's share of matches, but 24 missed last year. But then, as you mentioned, Bayern Munich, he was much better two seasons ago, missed just 8 matches, played 40 for Bayern Munich. The 18-19 season was 7 missed matches, 42 he played. So those are good numbers. Those are totally fair numbers. That I think the idea that he's always injured is a bit unfair, actually, going all the way back to his time at Barcelona when he left. I mean, he left a long time ago. It's a 2012-13 season. I was a younger man then. So, but that year, even he missed 11 games. and played 36. And that was, again, at the ripe old age of 22 when he left the club. And then the final point that I would ask our listeners, and you kind of hit it again. If Xavi wants to play the two pivots and he feels like De Jong is really an interior, or he feels like Thiago is the interior, as you mentioned, you'd prefer to see Thiago as the 10. That's interesting because I'm actually looking at the role he played for Bayern Munich. Not really so much the role he played for Liverpool, but the role he played for Bayern Munich. And I could see him wanting to use that being Xavi, Thiago as one of those two pivots. And if De Jong, again, as we said, is an interior, or even if Xavi plays him as a center back with three at the back, that being De Jong, I'm going to keep people's minds open to that idea. That leaves just Busquets, Nico Gonzalez, and potentially Sergio Roberto for those two spots. And even Nico has been playing as an interior recently. And I think, again, people have to understand that Xavi might shake that up as well. And then again, Sergio Roberto, is he going to come back into the midfield as an interior, as a pivot? But if you want to have to ask yourself, if there's just four players there, being Busquets, Nico Gonzalez, and potentially Sergio Roberto for those two pivot spots, would you rather have Thiago or Roberto as one of those pivots? I mean, I'm not asking you to answer that question. I think I know what the internet would say, right? We were on Twitter. We know what Twitter would say if it was Roberto or Thiago. And if you try to view and scope the midfield rotation as potentially that question, well, then Thiago makes a lot more sense if he can stay on the field. But again, can Barcelona take the risk of another player who just doesn't stay on the field? Because that currently is a major issue.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Sergio Roberto gets a lot of stick. And like, don't forget, there was, half credible rumors that Pep wanted to bring him to Man City last season. Like, and Pep is a pretty good judge of a player. I think that a lot of Barcelona players have been given a raw deal in the last few years because they've been playing in, a team, especially since Quique Setién took over, that just was out of whack. I think the dressing room had too much power and the coach wasn't able to implement a strict style on the pitch. So they weren't a functional unit, if that makes sense. And I think that, the performances of Gavi and Pedri and Sergio Busquets for the Spanish national team under Luis Enrique, who I really rate highly as a coach, shows that when you put these guys in a functional system, they can still deliver. So I think that, Sergio Roberto in this new Xavi system, we can see a new side to him if he can get his injury record in check. But I think that Xavi would approach this whole injury crisis that Barcelona are facing with almost a clean room approach, because it's just not normal the amount of injuries they're having. Is it a fault of training, or is it a fault of the medical staff or whatever? It shouldn't be happening. It's freakish, the amount of injuries that Barcelona players are sustaining in recent months. So I don't know, but I think if I was to choose, I would pick Thiago Alcantara as that holding midfielder, especially in La Liga, because, the majority of games Barca are playing, they're going to be the dominant side. They're going to be the team who are taking the game to the opposition, where the opposition sit back and play a low block. And I think in that kind of situation, playing Thiago as a pivot is a beneficial thing, because he can hold the ball, he can spray the ball, he can pick the lock with clever passes. You can leave the likes of, Gavi and Pedri to be fleet-footed kind of runners in more advanced positions. But I think also he's a role to play if you're playing against, say a Real Madrid or an Atletico Madrid or a big European team, like Chelsea, a Man City, a Liverpool. You could have a situation where you could have, say, Sergio Busquets and Sergio Roberto as those kind of holding midfielders, as those kind of defensive stalwarts. And then you could have Thiago in a more advanced role where he's got a bit less space to operate perhaps, but he can do more damage and hurt players more. That could also be an option. So I don't know. I think it's all kind of speculative because we don't know how Xavi is going to set up, how he rates players. And we know he likes Sergio Roberto. So I'm interested to see against Espanyol and as the weeks progress, how he kind of sets up his team and who he likes and where he likes them and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know how I've made so much content in this 2 weeks before we finally had to get to see what Xavi's going to do. I also want to plug, I have coming out on YouTube this week, a whole thing about his tactics. I'm trying a few different things with video, but that'll be fun. Anyway, we are told that this winter, Barcelona are looking to try to get three signings. Now, for those who know the finances, know that three seems like three too many players that Barcelona could afford, but for a Dani Alves, the number is already one. So now there's only two more signings potentially. And if it is deals like Dani Alves, or if you could do one more deal like the Dani Alves deal, which again is basically for free, and then you try to find a third player. But the third player that is being rumored about is Karim Adeyemi, who's been rumored and connected to Barcelona for quite some time, 2, 3, 4 years now. Reportedly, even 2018 or 19, he said no to La Masia. because he wanted to, he actually is originally a Bayern Munich product, and he decided to sow his seeds in other places, which actually wound up being really good for his career. Right now, he's got 15 goals and 22 appearances this season for Red Bull Salzburg. Transfermarkt, which is, you know, we usually try to trust as 22 million at his market value, but even in a small market, or let's say a market that has recorrected itself post-COVID, Alan, I feel like 22 is a bit low for Adeyemi. It feels low based on how expensive goals are, and he is one of the most promising, I think he's still 19, hasn't turned 20 yet, so he is one of the most promising teenage goal scorers in all of world football, and so 22 feels at like a small number. And now the two questions that I think people are rightfully asking, does he want to stay in Germany? Well, he's in Austria right now, but does he want to go back to Germany or be in Germany where he is, you know, his country of origin? He wouldn't be a perfect fit at Dortmund, I think, once Haaland left, though he's a lot like Daniel Malen and not as much like Haaland. So I think it might be a bit repetitive that way. But Adeyemi has a higher ceiling than Malen, who is now in his early 20s, and he'll be entering his prime soon. The question, though, Kule is obviously asking, does he really want Barca? He said that he's a fan of Messi, but so many young footballs, right? Vinicius Jr. said he was a fan of Messi, that he would, you know, he'd love to play with Messi, right, at Barcelona and all those things. So I think, I'm not saying that we throw that out, but as far as Barcelona being the club of somebody's dreams, I mean, money talks quite a bit, especially for, there's a lot of different players, whether it's, what is it, Wirtz, who plays for Leverkusen, has said, oh, you know, I enjoy watching Barcelona. I grew up watching Barcelona play. Of course, like, he was 6-7 years old when Pep Guardiola and Messi and Dani Alves and Xavi, yes, of course, like, so many different people have said that. But yeah, the Adeyemi, should I be throwing this out as far as I am, Alan, or do you think there's a little bit of credibility to this?
I don't know, to be honest with you. What I will say is that, you know, I don't know if you know Jasmine Baba, but I worked with her a good few times in the past on various projects, and she's a very well-respected voice in German football. And I had a conversation with her recently about, you know, why are so many Bundesliga players, as I mentioned earlier, kind of struggling when they come to, you know, a different league, the Premier League. And even, like, you have players like Luka Jovic, who came to Real Madrid after scoring loads of goals for Eintracht Frankfurt,
yeah,
hasn't managed to get that. You have Jadon Sancho this season. You have Leon Bailey, as I mentioned earlier. And, you know, the Timo Werner as well is another case. And there's several of those players who are like that, who are kind of just struggling to hit the ground running. And she said it's because kind of the way that teams play in the Bundesliga is more conducive to allow a striker to score goals, because it's more open. It's more, not that goals are cheaper there, but it's just goals are easier to come by in many ways, you know, especially when you're playing for a team who isn't, you know, the elite of the elite. You're not playing for Bayern Munich, for instance. And of course, Salzburg are a different proposition because they're playing in Austria. And, you know, they're one of the top teams in the league. And we've seen in the Champions League this season how good a side they are. But I'm just not entirely sure how well his promise that he's showed so far in Austria would translate to a situation like Barcelona's, which is more high pressure. It's more intense. It's more expectant. I spoke with Fabrizio Romano last week. And we're running a series of kind of interviews with him on Football España across this week. And what he told me, because, you know, I'd read in the Catalan press a few days previous that the three options that Xavi liked in those attacking positions were Ferran Torres, Raheem Sterling, and Dani Olmo. And he told me that the most likely of those three would be Dani Olmo, because of where he's at in his career. You know, we saw him play for Spain last night for Luis Enrique's La Roja. He did quite well. He's a kind of very positive player. He's very creative. He's not afraid to take on players and take on shots on goal. He's very intelligent. He speaks Croatian, he speaks Spanish, he speaks English too, I think. He's an interesting prospect. Obviously, Barcelona had approached him last summer and reportedly didn't work out. But I think that he's potentially the most likely scenario if they were to bring in that kind of wide player, that kind of attacker. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Fabrizio said that he's much more likely than, especially, most definitely Ferran Torres. The Ferran Torres thing is a pipe dream. But, you know, Raheem Sterling as well is quite a difficult one because of his wages, because of the status in the English player and how much he would cost and all that kind of thing. Whereas Dani Olmo was maybe more likely option there. So I don't know. I mean, God knows what Xavi and Matteo Alemany is cooking up. And of course, Roman Planes is leaving the club too. So there'd be somebody coming in there. Maybe, I don't know, yeah. Carlos Puyol. So we'll see, but I've not heard anything specific about Adeyemi, although he seems like an interesting prospect. But, you know, if I was Barcelona, I'm not sure I'd go for him as the cure to their ills, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, though, you've set up a pretty good argument as to why Barcelona would potentially get him at that kind of number. If there were worries that he might not be able to adapt to a place like the Premier League, where, you know, if a Premier League side may be willing to spend 40 or 50 million on him, then obviously he's going to take that. But I mean, it's also, again, Dortmund or Bayern Munich could say, hey, well, we know that he can score in this kind of style, the Austrian League, the step up from the German Bundesliga, from the Austrian League. We've seen with RB Leipzig that a lot of players can make that jump from Salzburg to RB Leipzig. He's also, again, in that pipeline. So it might be a little bit difficult to get him out of the Leipzig pipeline. But yes, Dani Olmo is the one that keeps being thrown about. And obviously the 70 million euros that we had heard for him over the summer are just, you know, a bit insane. When Barcelona, we know that they're going to be looking at the free agents is who they're going to be looking for starting those conversations with. And so if Dani Olmo is not in any way reasonably, you know, possible financially, then that's just not going to happen. Well, anyway, so for Barcelona, they're going to try to get more reinforcements in January. I think of all the Liga teams, there are some that will be looking for reinforcements, particularly the Hadafes of the world, the Levantes of the world, that seem to be missing one or two pieces to survive in the Liga, but they're not going to potentially have the same financial metal. Now, I'm going to transfer this conversation to talking about the rest of La Liga. It's almost a where do you want to start? I'm going to lead you a little bit because I know that your, we'll say, home base, other than Cork in Ireland, is in Seville. But the teams above Barcelona, who had starting with this derby, Catalan derby against Espanyol this weekend, they're sitting on 17 points in ninth place, that is Barcelona, with 10th place Valencia on 17 points and 11th place Espanyol on 17 points as well. Real Sociedad, Real Madrid, Sevilla round out the top three, with Sevilla a league best 7 goals against. As much as Sevilla's attack has been exciting, their goal differential as far as the goals against has been their incredible mark this year. Atletico Madrid, I know we want to talk about, they're in fourth. And then Real Betis, Rayo Vallecano, who just beat Barcelona. And then Osasuna, who of that top seven is the only one with a negative point differential. And Athletic Club is in eighth with their second, or their league best, we'll say, or second in the league, 8 goals against. So Athletic Club is actually defending again, and therefore they're in the top half of the table. That's usually how it goes, right, with the Basque group, that if they defend, then they can be in the top half. If they don't defend, they're in the bottom half. Of those teams, I think obviously we should start with the Seville derby that you obviously were watching intently, Sevilla against Real Betis. And for Sevilla and Real Betis, I don't see either of those falling out of the top seven, but do you see cracks in their armor? Because really, I mean, basically I'm asking you, how is Barcelona going from ninth into the top four, right? How are they going to push into that next category and even top five or six at this point?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing about Ronald Koeman's reign, I had a problem with personally, was that he was always talking about, you know, this is what there is, as he kept saying, really, you know. And I think that that's just patently not true. I think that Barcelona should be in the top four, without a doubt. Their squad is good enough to be in the top four. And I'd be confident, given what I know about Xavi as a man, first and foremost, and the coach, that he'd be able to inject a bit of crucial positive momentum into that team and they'd be able to finish in the top four and get Champions League football for next season. I think that's going to happen. And then regarding the other teams, yeah, I think that, you know, both Sevilla clubs are an interesting moment because they both started the season well on paper. Although Sevilla's start, it was a case of results masking performances because they never really played convincing football. Mm-hmm. They played quite poor football, to be honest. They're kind of grinding out results, but never really clicking properly. Their form in Europe has been very, very poor. They're bottom of the Champions League group behind Wolfsburg, behind Lille, and behind Salzburg, actually, the Austrian team we were just talking about, you know, which is just not acceptable. They should be winning that group, to be honest with you, given their pedigree in European competition and given the players they have, given the depth of their squad, they should be winning that group 100%. But they're not performing in Europe for some reason, not mirroring their form in La Liga, at least. But at the same time, that's the way they play under Lopetegui. They're very much a winning machine and they play results football. And that's fine when you're getting results, but once the results dry up, you begin to ask questions because there isn't that same philosophy or performance-based style that gets teams that aren't maybe getting consistent results excited, if that makes sense. But I think they're a strong team. I think they have a good squad. They've been unlucky with injuries this year. Youssef El-Nesyri has been out for a good period. Papu Gomez has had a knock. I reckon that they'll still be there or thereabouts coming into the season. I back them for a top four place, to be honest with you. Real Betis, similarly, have, you know, started the season really well. They have a good team under Manuel Pellegrini. He's a very competent coach, very clever coach. No fancy tricks or no revolutionary formulas. Just kind of good sound principles, basically, that have lended itself to a strong team. And that's without spending much money in the transfer market either. But they have a good squad. You know, Sergio Canales is a very good player. Nabil Fekir is a very good player. Borja Iglesias. William Jose is a competent striker. You know, they have good players there as well. Claudio Bravo is a seasoned competitor, as you know very well, coming from Barcelona. Mm-hmm. They have a good squad. You know, I think they'll be in the hunt for Europa League places this season. And I back them to do it. I mean, obviously, this last week was rough for them. They took a 4-0 beating at the hands of Bayer Leverkusen in the Europa League. They got hammered by Atletico Madrid 3-0 at the Wanda the weekend before the international break. The weekend before the international break. And then, of course, they lost the derby 2-0 to Sevilla and their own turf, which was a pretty poor performance because, you know, playing in front of a packed Benito Villamarine, you'd expect them to do better, and they never really showed any initiative. I mean, they got maybe a harsh red card, you could say, early in the game, but I still reckon they should have given more, but they never did. They never kind of took the game to Sevilla. They never applied any pressure. They didn't create many good chances. So I was disappointed with their performance, to be honest. But given that this window of the international break to kind of recuperate and recalibrate, I back them to come back stronger. Once they kick off next weekend, and I back them to be there, thereabouts for the European places, to be honest with you. So yeah, that's why I reckon about the Sevilla clubs anyway, at least.
Yeah, the eight teams in front of Barcelona, as I said, with Osasuna in their negative goal differential, that should kind of throw them out of the top seven at some point. You'd expect that to happen. Osasuna is, you know, they're going to get good results at home, but, and they've also been picking up a few on the road, but Osasuna I think will fall off. And then, you know, I can poke holes. I mean, the positive thing that I say, you know, obviously this is the Barcelona podcast, so I'm going to try to be positive. I'm going to try to take that kind of approach. But looking around the rest of the Liga, as much as I say, oh, Barcelona are in a way that there are a lot of teams that are better than Barca under Ronald Koeman, and that is true. And that is why Barca do justifiably sit in ninth. You watch their performance against Rayo Vallecano. You watch them in El Clasico. They're clearly a step below, or at least they were a step below. But you could easily talk me into this argument that if Barca were under Ronald Koeman with all their injuries in that crisis, they were the worst case scenario. And so they find themselves in ninth because they were hit with that kind of worst case scenario crisis, right? That even Real Madrid, who sit in second place right now, Vinicius Jr. is really putting it together with 7 goals, but he has never sustained that goal scoring over the course of a season, which maybe he's turned the corner. He's now, you know, in his early 20s. So it's now time to, maybe he's turned that corner. Or he's what? He's 20, 21. He's not, you know, not that old at all. He's just entering.
22.
Yeah, somewhere in there. And then Karim Benzema, 10 goals and 7 assists. I think that is sustainable. I think Karim Benzema is just that good, leading both categories in the Liga. And Real Madrid still, though, are sitting in second. They have a game in hand over Real Sociedad, so they could take first, sure. But Real Madrid certainly are not the best version of themselves that we've seen. But I still think they're going to finish top 4, top 2 very easily. And we're not even worrying about them at all, if anything, because of the result in El Clasico early on. And then Atletico Madrid, rescuing themselves late, conceding more goals than normal. Somehow Luis Suarez still has 7 goals and still banging them in. And then for Espanyol, even behind Barcelona, Raúl de Tomás with 7 goals for them, kind of doing what they need to do. And then Rayo Vallecano, Radamel Falcao, putting them home, you know, feeling good, doing the right things. And Oscar Trejo setting it up, and then Falcao knocking them home. But that 1-2 punch. But you could easily talk me into the fact that all those teams have kind of had results go their way a bit in this first 2 months of the season. And Barcelona, every time there were points available, every time there were points to grab, they let those points go away. And if Barcelona just start winning just a little bit, 2-1, 1-0, it doesn't matter how they get the points. If Barcelona start changing some of those things, I mean, even Celta de Vigo, if they don't allow a goal a minute after extra time was supposed to be over to Iago Aspas, then they've walked away with 3 points. Instead, they walk away with 1. And that those big differences of just getting results, and whether it's pretty, whether it's perfect football, whether it's a different formation, or our eyes are, you know, and our hearts are ablaze with this wonderment of what Xavi's capable of putting on the field. It doesn't matter, really. It's just 3 points over and over and over again, week in and week out and midweek. And if Barcelona can do that, as I said, I've kind of said about Barcelona, I think they're still top 4 is possible. Top 4 is the goal. We're going to continue to push on all season long, but as far as all those teams that are in front of Barcelona, the one I didn't mention here was Real Sociedad. So with Real Madrid, Sevilla, and Atletico Madrid, and I guess you throw Real Betis in there too, between those 4, Real Sociedad, who were first place in January last year and then completely fell off, they're the one team that I felt like is pretty foolproof. They've had a few bad performances this year, but they have easily been the most consistent team this season. They know exactly who they are. And they know exactly how to fill holes in that system. And there, of all these teams, we've been mentioning individual players. I think Real Sociedad, you're talking about a system and a team more so than anything else.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And just before I begin to talk about La Real, I just want to mention on the point you made about Barcelona. And I agree, because I remember after the Celta Vigo game, Frenkie de Jong was saying that the players need to be braver and they need to be looking for the ball, because when things got hot in the second half and the momentum began to turn and Balaidos began to get up a bit, there was players going into their shells, not demanding the ball, not creating spaces, not creating opportunities for the players to pass them, not making themselves available. And that's a mentality shift. And Xavi has spoken about that in the past. He's spoken about, you know, players turning the mentality from the ball being a bomb to the ball being a treasure. And I think if you can correct that little mentality flick in the Barcelona squad, it'll make aeons of difference. You know, so I'm excited to see how he does there from a mental perspective as much as a tactical or a coaching perspective. I think that he'll really improve the mentalities. But yeah, I agree with you completely with La Real. I think they're a really, really good team. Obviously, last season, you're right, they started well and then kind of fell off in the second half of the season. I remember speaking to Phil Ball at the end of last season, who's a very well-respected voice in Real Sociedad. He did San Sebastian, did in Donostia for many, many years. He follows the league very closely. He's a writer and all kinds of stuff. And he said to me that the difference between La Real and Sevilla, which is maybe the team La Real aspires to be, is a bit of grit, a bit of a kind of a grizzled nature. His point was that Sevilla have those players. They have Jesus Navas, they have Ivan Rakitic, they have Fernando Reyes, they have, you know, Diego Carlos, Lucas Ocampos, kind of tough men who kind of aren't, who've been around, they've traveled around a bit, and they kind of know what it takes to win matches as opposed to playing well. They can win matches. And that's Sevilla's greatest strength, is the characters they have in their team as opposed to the quality they have in their team. And I think that Real Sociedad were lacking that last season. I reckon this season that's changed somewhat because of the natural development of their players. The group has been together for another year. And the realities of the COVID market means that they weren't able to be poached in a way they might have been if it was a normal situation. You can imagine Barcelona signing Alexander Isak or Atletico Madrid signing Mikel Merino. But that hasn't happened because of several reasons. And of course, Mikel Oyarzabal as well. You know, like these guys are really, really good players. But because of the COVID reality, they've kept the group together. Those players have got experience. Mikel Merino, Oyarzabal will both be in the Spanish squad for the World Cup, I'd imagine. I think they both deserve a place. Obviously, Oyarzabal is injured at the moment. Mikel Merino came on last night. I think they're really, really good players. And I reckon that they've done well by being around that group. And they've kind of learned from that group. Alexander Isak has improved again this season. I think he's a really, really exciting player. I think he could actually be the next kind of top young European striker, because I remember watching him at La Cartuja in Seville in the European Championships. And I remember every time Sweden got the ball on the break, he was just frightening to watch because he had so much potency and ability. It was incredible to watch, you know. So such a frightening player to play against, I'd imagine. So they have quality throughout the team, basically. You know, they're very intelligent central midfielders, Zubimendi and Guevara, guys who can just retain possession and can slow things down when they need to. They have a coach who knows the club inside out. And then he's well placed too with Xabi Alonso potentially taking over from him in the near future. Who knows, you know, given the job he's doing with the Real Sociedad B with Sanchez. So I think, you know, it's great for La Liga that they're doing well, because they're almost an ideal club in many ways. You know, such a investment in the youth system, such a commitment to a playing style, as you mentioned, and a kind of a, you know, root and branch approach that has served them very, very well, and even enabled them to compete against, you know, clubs with bigger budgets and bigger clubs than them. So I think it'd be good for La Liga to see them sustain their title race this season, and I'm interested to see if they will, because I think that they're mentally stronger than they were last season, and they have an ability to do so. So we'll see now as the season gets into the business end, once you get through winter, once you get to, you know, February, March, April, because they're still involved in the Europa League, you don't forget. Mm-hmm. And that'd be difficult playing, you know, Thursday night and then Sunday once things get to a crunch time. And don't forget, they were paced pretty badly with Manchester United last season. That's 4-0 at Old Trafford. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I think it'd be really, really good for La Liga if they were to maintain that pace and kind of compete and, you know, towards the back end of the season, being with a chance for a Champions League place. But I think it'd be difficult. I mean, if you were to ask me now who's going to win the league, I would say Real Madrid. That's why I'm back. Just because I think that the age of these players they have, you know, Toni Kroos, Luka Modric, Casemiro, Karim Benzema, like these are guys who know how to win. You know, Thibaut Courtois now as well, they know how to win. And I think Carletto is the kind of coach who can get the best out of those players. He's not going to play scintillating football. He's not Pep Guardiola. He's not Jurgen Klopp. He's not Thomas Tuchel. But he is a coach who can get results. And I reckon that the way the season is going, the form of Barcelona, the form of Atletico, I would back them to win the title. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to agree with you. But yeah, top four for Barcelona, as I said, continues to be the goal, not even winning the league. But that means if Real Sociedad do keep pace, that one of Real Madrid, Sevilla, or Atletico Madrid have to be the one to drop out to make room for Barcelona. So that is the big question that continues, I think, be the big question. And why I brought up and wanted to talk about the rest of the Liga with you, because, again, it's not always just always about Barcelona. It's about what's happening elsewhere and everybody else dropping points or not dropping points for all those different reasons. So, Alan, you were terrific, of course. So I want to ask you where people can find more of your work. I already said Football España, but in particular, what are you working on?
Yeah, so you can get me on Twitter at Azulfeely, AzulfeeHeli. And then, of course, Football España at Football España, lowercase space. Actually, don't even know how to describe that, you know, that letter, that character, the kind of lowercase space or whatever. But if you search Football España, it will come up, I'm pretty sure. So that's where to find me, basically. At the moment, we're actually doing some interesting things. We're kind of looking at the site, the tone of the site, and kind of looking to maybe change it a bit and get a bit more, maybe more serious and more in-depth in the work we do. Mm. So let's see, there's good things happening there, busy at an administrative level, and of course keeping up to date with the news and, you know, working in various pieces and stuff like that. Very much looking forward to Xavi taking over at the weekend. That'll be a fascinating story for sure.
Yep.
And just glad that we've made a positivity about Barcelona again, because, you know, while it's, you know, there's lots of memes and stuff and the banter pages are enjoying Barca wallowing in misery, you could say, since the 8-2 or before that, even since Quique Setién came in, I think that it's important for Spanish football. Barcelona are functional and moving in the right direction. And I think that, you know, no matter what, that's what's happening under Xavi Hernandez. I think the good times are hopefully going to be back soon. And it might take time for them to get up to speed that we expect from them. But I think they're going in the right direction again after quite a bit of time in stasis, you could say. So yeah.
Yeah, I think the big picture for the Liga is that Barcelona and Real Madrid, if they're on the top of their game, it makes the Liga a lot better, yes. But then Atletico Madrid and Sevilla and Real Sociedad, you ask those teams to be pushing the top two as well. So it doesn't have to be a duopoly. It could be those two are actually flying high and everyone else is pushing them too. So that's the positive for the Liga, if they as an entire league can get back to the top of the mountain, we'll have to say. But yes, of course, in the show notes, follow Alan on Twitter, Football España. You could all find that in the show notes. We're also on Twitter and Instagram. You know where to find us, at the Barcelona Pod, and closed Facebook group, Patreon, YouTube, you know the rest of it. So a lot of good stuff going on our side, but more importantly, again, research the rest of the league, learn about the rest of the teams that Barcelona are facing week in, week out to get top four, educate yourself, and Football España is a perfect place to do that. So again, thanks so much for Alan, and thanks so much for you, the listeners, for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barça.